Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 23. The Brahmana's wives blessed. Text number 8. Dikshaya Pashu Sangstaya.
Dikshaya Pashu Sangstaya.
Saucha Manyascha Sattamaha.
Saucha Manyascha Sattamaha.
Anyatra dikshatasyapi.
Anyatra dikshatasyapi.
Nananam ashnan hi dushyati.
Nananam ashnan hi dushyati.
Dikshaya.
Dikshaya.
Beginning with initiation for a sacrifice.
Pashu sangstaya.
Until sacrificing the animal.
Sautramanya.
Outside of the sacrifice,
known as
Sautramani, Cha, and Sattama, O purest ones, Anyatra, elsewhere, Dikshitasya, a one who has been initiated for the sacrifice. Api,
even.
Na,
not.
Anam,
food.
Ashnan,
eating.
He,
indeed.
Dushyati,
creates offense.
Translation, except during the interval between the initiation of the performer of a sacrifice and the actual sacrifice of the animal, almost pure brahmanas, it is not contaminating for even the initiated to partake of food, at least in sacrifices other than sautramani. Purport. The cowherd boys anticipated the possible objection from the brahmanas that they couldn't give the boys any food because they themselves had not eaten, and that a priest initiated to perform a sacrifice should not eat. Therefore, the boys humbly informed the brahmanas about various technicalities of ritualistic sacrifices. The cowherd boys were not unaware of the formalities of Vedic culture, but their real intention was simply to render loving service to Lord Krishna. Om Agana Timadandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Yes, our real intention in whatever we do should be simply to give loving service to Krishna and satisfy him. That is the be-all and end-all of the bhakta's endeavors. The bhakta, the devotee, is always thinking, will Krishna be satisfied by this? Or, as you become more advanced, Krishna may be satisfied by this, but could he be satisfied by something better? This is the ever-escalating scope of bhakti. The ocean of loving service to the Lord is always expanding. So the devotee, as the years go by, simply becomes more and more expert in knowing what gives Krishna pleasure at a particular moment. Like Mother Yashoda. Everything in her house is meant 100% for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, she could confidently leave Krishna, although he was being nursed on her lap and she was staring in his face as she nursed him. She could leave him. She could put him down to go tend to milk boiling over on the stove, because that milk boiling over on the stove was for Krishna's pleasure, to keep him from wandering into others' houses and stealing milk products. Nevertheless, of course, to heighten the pastime, to give flavor to the leela, Krishna became angry. What is this? I have not finished being breastfed, and she's put me down. So he showed anger, pure, transcendental anger, Satchidananda, anger. He bit his lip crackly with anger, pressed his lips together, eyes turned red, He's getting into the Leela. Mother Yashoda has neglected me. To increase Mother Yashoda's love, because she was Krishna's protector, maintainer. So Krishna's throwing a temper tantrum to add flavor to the rasa. We want to look at our life and see who is getting the pleasure. In this present decadent and dark age, it's always the senses and the mind that are trying to get pleasure. Either your senses and mind or someone else's senses and mind. And this is such a debilitating, excruciating and torturous process. Although, of course, the illusory energy makes it look normal. This is the way normal people live. Senses, mind, leave it at that. Bhakti yoga takes you far beyond what is considered to be normal. Actually, it takes you to the real norm, Krishna's pleasure. So the cowherd boys are here appealing to the brahmanas. Wake up, what's going on here? Krishna's pleasure. They even say, Satama, O purest ones, O pure brahmanas. They're being a little poking here, just to provoke the brahmanas. Come on, you're supposed to understand the goal of the Vedas is Krishna, but you've been lost in ritualistic activities for elevation to the heavenly planets. You've missed the point. Now, the cowherd boys are demonstrating that they're just not naive, unaware little kids. Because of their association with Krishna, they can become empowered with whatever knowledge they need to know. So they're demonstrating that here. They're actually speaking very technical details about the process of yajna. Ordinarily, there's no way a cowherd boy should be knowing all this or talking all this. But because they are empowered by Krishna, they have been dispatched by Krishna to execute a task, they have all the necessary intelligence to accomplish that mission. Most importantly, they're not embarking on any mission in the ordinary material sense. Their real mission is to add flavor to the Leela, to make the Leela more enjoyable. So therefore, in order to show the contrast between the brahmanas and their wives, the cowherd boys are injecting these technicalities into the situation. That you can give us the food, it's all right. Basically, the cowherd boys were saying, according to the yajna technicalities, you can either give us the food before the priest has eaten or after. It's okay. Now, which one is it going to be? But the brahmanas, they wouldn't answer. They wouldn't say yes. They wouldn't say no. They just ignored the boys. They, as the next verse says, shinvantopi nashushruvaha shushruhu. They heard the supplication, the plea, the request from the cowherd boys, but they did not hear. Meaning, although the sound apparently went into their ears, they did not acknowledge it, nor did they want to act on it. So they heard, but they did not hear. We were speaking last night at a program how Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto of Bhagavatam says, Pashanapina Pashati. You are sufficiently experienced, but still, actually, you're not experienced. You are sufficiently experienced, but you don't see. If you were actually experienced, you would see what's going on. You'd see the fault of material existence. Deha patra kalatra dishu atmasanyeshra satsupi. Tesham kamata nidanam pashanapi napashati. You would see that all your attempts to surround yourself with the soldiers of protection, those attempts are going to fail because the soldiers are failure. You surround yourself with friends and family, lovers, and think, I'll be safe in the material world. My heart will become fulfilled. Everything will be all right. But Shukadeva Goswami points out the truth. You're experienced enough to know this won't work, but still you don't see. And we were also speaking last night about another verse in that same chapter spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. Kim Pramatasya Bahubi Parokshire Ayanaya. What's the use of a long life? What do you mean, what's the use of a long life? Everyone wants to drag on for as many years as they can. But Shukadeva Goswami says, there's no point to a long life. If it's characterized by inexperience. In other words, even though time is passing, that doesn't mean you're truly experienced. Time is passing, but you still don't understand. You ought to have become experienced. But even though you've been through so many adventures and sagas and dramas and tragedies, still you don't understand. So Shukadeva Goswami says, knowing this point, what's the use of a long life? Better a short life. In fact, better a lifespan of just a few moments if in those few moments you can begin your Krishna conscious progress. So this is Shukadeva Goswami's way of looking at things. And if we take it seriously, it will really help us to sort out our life. You can just ask yourself that question every morning. What's the value of a long life? Why do I want to drag on? What's my purpose? And sometimes we'll try to be very charitable. Well, it's not that I want anything for myself. It's for the children. It's for the grandchildren. And on and on it goes. But actually, Shukadeva Goswami's point still remains valid. Even if you try to offload the emphasis from you to others, Shukadeva Goswami's point is, unless you know what you're doing, unless you know how to give real care, unless you know how to give real benefit, then still you are inexperienced and you're wasting your time. These brahmanas, they heard, but they did not hear. They couldn't hear because their minds are just full of small-time hopes and dreams. We're going to go to the heavenly planets. We're going to accumulate lots of good punya and enjoy. Of course, the aspirations of these brahmanas are far beyond the crude, gross, animalistic aspirations of today. But still, they're condemned because they're not focused on Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, the verdict, though presuming themselves advanced in Vedic learning, they were actually inexperienced fools. They had so many small-time, inconsequential, childish things moving around in their head. And they couldn't focus. They couldn't hear the request to serve Krishna. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that when you free yourself of all desires for sense gratification, which are born of mental concoction. Very important to recognize where these material desires come from. They're concocted by the mind. You free yourself from those, and then your mind, your lifestyle can actually calm down, and you'll find satisfaction in the pure self alone. Finding satisfaction in the pure self alone is not in the monistic or impersonalist sense that you just, find satisfaction in the pure self alone. Hum Brahmashmi, I am Brahman, so hum. I am that Brahman, I am that greatest. Tattvam Asi, the Brahman is the same as me. That's not finding satisfaction in the pure self alone. The pure self is eternally in relationship with Krishna. So finding satisfaction in the pure self alone means finding satisfaction in the relationship with Krishna, because the pure self is always in relation to Krishna, the supreme pure self. But we're so used to reading things wrongly. Oh, the pure self, finding satisfaction in the pure self alone. And we just imagine ourselves and our purity. We're getting satisfied by ourselves, separate from Krishna. It's just my pure self. I'm just going to meditate on that. No, you're reading wrong. Pure self means in relationship with Krishna. It's like these cowherd boys. We've been speaking about the different types of cowherd boys. the well-wishers who are generally older than Krishna and have a mixture of servitorship dealings in their sakya prem, friendship, love of Krishna. Then there's the regular friends, for want of a better word. And they're generally, the first ones, just the older ones, parental. They have some parental feelings for Krishna because they're older, like Balaram. They look after Krishna. The second group, the ordinary friends. They have some servitorship feelings because they're younger than Krishna. And then the third group, the Priyasakas, they are confidential. And they think, they act equal with Krishna when Krishna's in the forest. A Priyasaka will come and embrace Krishna tightly from the front. And while he's doing that, another Priyasaka will come from behind Krishna and cover his eyes with his hands. So they are freely acting on the equality platform. And then there's the most confidential, the intimate group of friends, the Priyanarmas. And these are the ones who interact with the gopis and are giving messages from the gopis to Krishna, negotiating, canvassing on behalf of Krishna. You'll read in Nectar of Devotion how Srimati Radharani, she's telling one of her friends, what can I do? This Ujwala, he's one of the Priyanarmas. He's coming to me, entreating on behalf of Krishna. Who can resist these canvases? The gopis also point out, just see what's going on. This Priyanarma is whispering Radharani's message into Krishna's ear. Another Priyanarma is giving him a handwritten note from another gopi. Another Priyanarma is handing Krishna betel nuts presented from a gopi. In this way, these most intimate friends of Krishna, they're interacting with the cowherd girls and conveying messages, gifts, canvassing, please don't be angry with Krishna. He didn't really mean to look at any other girls. This is the fun in Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is always full of it's all about Krishna. The perfection of gossip, small town talk, that's Vrindavan. It's full of small town talk. And no one takes any of it very seriously, but it's still 100% about Krishna and for Krishna's pleasure. So the cowherd boys have given the brahmanas a lesson in yagyas, but these brahmanas are so puffed up. Their heads are so full of concocted desires that they can't recognize they're hearing a request from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They didn't even say yes or no. Shukadeva Goswami, in presenting this narration to Pritchard Maharaj, he gets a little fired up at this point. He says, when the brahmanas failed to reply, even with a simple yes or no, O chastiser of the enemy, Pritchard Maharaj. In other words, Pritchard Maharaj, if you were there, you would have taken action against these brahmanas. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this is Shukadeva Goswami getting fired up. You know, they call themselves brahmanas. They've got a direct request from Krishna. What is this? Pritchard Maharaj, Parantapa. He particularly uses that word, Parantapa. O chastiser of the enemies, to arouse Pritchard Maharaj. If you were there, this would have never happened. You would have taken action against those brahmanas. You would have put them in their place. So, the cowherd boys returned disappointed to Krishna and Balaram. And what was Krishna's reaction? He laughed. There were two reasons for his laughter. First of all, to indicate to the boys, the cowherd boys, that even though these brahmanas are materialistic, they don't understand the goal of Vedas, still they should be respected for the sake of the social system. Don't be angry at them. So by Krishna's laughing, he dissipated any possible anger. And also he wanted to show, this is a way of begging. you know, sometimes you people give you something, sometimes they don't. Don't take it seriously. Now, Krishna switches from plan A to plan B, but plan B was actually the real plan. How to give blessings to the wives of the brahmanas. And this is going to end up very embarrassing for the brahmanas. Because, actually, no man likes to be outdone by his wife. That's just male psychology. The male ego just reigns supreme over the whole universe. But in this case, you're going to see, at the end of this lila, that the brahmanas, they are embarrassed, but then actually they become humble. So Krishna says to the coward boys, go to the wives of the brahmanas. Tell them I'm here with Balaram. They'll certainly give you food. Why? Because they are most affectionate to me, and their intelligence resides in me alone. Krishna here is teaching us how to render bhakti. We want to be affectionate to Krishna. How do you become affectionate to Krishna? By, first of all, becoming very duty conscious. Becoming attached to your duty. From that, the affection develops. Therefore, nectar devotion gives us the process. Sadhana bhakti, devotional service done according to rules and regulations, out of duty, will bring you to the next stage in which you have affection, spontaneous feeling for Krishna. You don't do things because of duty or obligation. You do things because of affection. So there is a way to progress from the disease, material condition, of being averse to Krishna and his service to becoming attracted to Krishna and his service. It takes time. Sometimes devotees, you hear them, oh, I've been chanting for 2 whole years. I've been restraining myself from material desires for 4 years. Well, that's nothing. What about a whole lifetime? Do you know the effort, for example, that someone has to go through to go to med school? Years in med school. And then when you finally finish, you have to be an intern at a hospital. You really can't get going until you're like 27 or 28. But persons are willing to do that. They have to study so hard. It's not like other university courses. You can't slack off. If you want to be a doctor, it's very strict and competitive. I remember my brother, he married while he was in med school. And every time I would visit him, he would be at, he'd be at his internship or something like that, and his wife would be crying. It's a common stereotype, the wife of someone who's in med school or is an intern. They never see their husband. So she is always crying, oh, Ramal is dead. How many years can it be like this? I would advise her, don't worry, he'll be finished soon, then there'll be the money. But she was so overwhelmed with emotions, she couldn't see beyond her emotions. Oh, it's been 2 years like this. Med school, internship, oh, I never see him. What's the point of the marriage? Because now he's got the money. He's CEO of some charity, which is funded with $150 million. They open clinics for children like that. So I remind the wife of that now. Don't you remember back? Oh, I don't remember anything. Don't you remember when I came and consoled you? In my travels around the world, I stopped off and I consoled you. What are you talking about? I don't remember anything. It's the way it is in this world. So why can't we be a little dedicated to Krishna service? It's embarrassing how weak we are. We have to look at what are possible sources of strength. The possible sources of strength are basically focused on hearing the holy name of Krishna. Without that, without devising our life so that Krishna's holy name is in the center, we're never going to really be strong devotees. So here, Krishna tells the cowherd boys, the wives of the brahmanas, they have affection for me, and their intelligence resides in me alone. Intelligence is very important, because as Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita, you can steady the mind with spiritual intelligence. And that way you can conquer over material desires. Even the grossest material desires can be conquered over if you steady your mind with deliberative spiritual intelligence. That means spiritual intelligence that deliberates. Let me analyze my situation through the eyes of the Shastra. I'm feeling this, and I feel like I want that. But let me deliberate through Srimad Bhagavatam and analyze myself, put myself against the wall and check myself out. That's the kind of intelligence that will steady the mind. So, the cowherd boys, you're going to hear, they go to the house of the brahmanas, and just the wives are there, because the brahmanas are off doing their yajnas for going to the heavenly planets. And the boys bow down with humility, offering obeisances, because the wife of a brahmana is one of the seven mothers to be respected. And now bear in mind that Krishna had told the cowherd boys, don't tell these wives of the brahmanas I'm hungry because it'll cause them such pain. And they're so attached to me. The cowherd boys, once they got there, they saw this is a real love-packed situation, and we have to aid in the expression of the rasa. So they had a threefold approach to communicating with the wives of the brahmanas after they paid their obeisances. The acharyas point this out, how the situation went in detail. First of all, the cowherd boys announced, we have been sent by Krishna and Balaram. As soon as these ladies heard the names Krishna and Balaram, they fainted in ecstatic trance just by hearing the names Krishna and Balaram. Now the cowherd boys added further excitement to this ecstatic samadhi. We've been sent by Krishna and Balaram, number one. Number two, they're nearby. This just increased the ecstasy. And then the cowherd boys saw these ladies have just gone in deep into ecstatic trance. How to bring them out of the trance. Then they said, number three, Krishna and Balaram are hungry. Then the ladies began to curse themselves. What are we doing in ecstatic trance when Krishna and Balaram are hungry? Get out of the trance. We've got to get out of the trance and do something. This is the ecstasy of Krishna Leela. They were in the height of ecstasy in a trance, but they cursed it. They wanted to get out of it because of service to Krishna. They're showing us a lesson that we're really not attached to being ecstatic. We are attached to pleasing Krishna. The cowherd boys skillfully navigated the situation of their hearing that Krishna sent them, Krishna is nearby, and Krishna is hungry. So, these wives of the brahmanas, they always had eagerness to see Krishna because their minds had already been enchanted by hearing about Krishna. Therefore, just as soon as they heard his name, they became excited so much that, as we said, they went into trance. How do they hear about Krishna? They heard just from interactions of people coming from Krishna's village to their village. They heard the descriptions of Krishna and their mind became enchanted. This is how potent the process is of hearing about Krishna. The mind becomes enchanted. Therefore, they were eager to see Krishna. But actually, they had seen him by hearing. We should never underestimate the hearing process. It is the same as seeing. They gathered up their foodstuffs and they ran off to see Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami says, Samudram Iva Nimnaga, just like rivers go to the ocean. Now, the acharyas explained that Sukadeva Goswami is using this example to cut down any misconceptions that this is some kind of misbehavior or marriage infidelity. Sukadeva Goswami is more or less pointing out to you, it's natural, it's their constitutional position to run to Krishna, and that's everyone's constitutional position. So don't you dare think that they were being unfaithful to their husbands, they were being illicit. No. Actually, the whole accusation of being illicit is on the brahmanas, because the brahmanas don't understand the goal of the Vedas. They don't understand that everything belongs to Krishna. Their food, they themselves, their wives. So therefore, you have this example, samudram iva nimnaga, just as rivers flow toward the sea. You may remember in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, Queen Kunti prays to Krishna, may my attraction ever flow to you, just like the Ganga is flowing into the ocean. That's a prayer for spontaneous love of Krishna. The wives of the brahmanas, they easily transcended any impediments offered by their family members who tried to forbid them from going. But these women had heard so much about Krishna, nothing could keep them back. So they ran through the forest, and there they got their first sight with their eyes of Krishna. They'd already seen Krishna by hearing, but now they're going to see with their eyes. And there they saw him walking so beautifully along the bank of the Jamuna, blackish blue complexion, yellow clothes, body decorated with forest minerals and forest flowers, a peacock feather in his hair, just looking stunning. As soon as the wives of the brahmanas saw him, they forced him through their eyes into their heart and embraced him. This is how powerful bhakti is. There's nothing on the material platform that can compare to the love in bhakti between the pure soul and Krishna. They forced Krishna through their eyes into their heart, into the chamber of their heart, and embraced him. And what was Krishna doing? He had a left hand flung on the shoulder of a friend, and in his right hand he was twirling a lotus flower. The acharyas point out this is very significant. Everything Krishna does is significant. He was twirling a lotus flower, indicating to the wives of the brahmanas, your lotus-like hearts are in my hand now. And also, the twirling of the lotus flower was indicating, my lotus heart is twirling because of you. This is Krishna. He's the most expert in reciprocation. So it's so amazing that we don't trust Krishna. This is our problem. This pastime can teach us how to simply focus on pleasing Krishna. These cowherd ladies, they ran to Krishna, just like the gopis in Vrindavan when they heard Krishna's flute. And Krishna is going to greet them just as he did the gopis when they ran out in the middle of the night. He greeted them very officially. And then he's going to tell them to go home, just as he told the gopis to go home. And the wives of the brahmanas are going to almost recite the same verse to Krishna, similar to what the gopis said. Why, don't be cruel. Please do not speak in that way. Krishna is going to send them home, though, unlike what happened to the gopis. Why? Because the acharyas explain that Krishna sent the brahmanas' wives home because he knows what makes the best loving pastime. So he knew that their love will be more ecstatic if I send them home. In other words, everything is individual. You can't say, why did Krishna send the wives of the brahmanas home and he didn't send the gopis home? Krishna knows how to get the best love out of every situation. So he always has his eye on the prem. How much prem will the pastime produce if it goes this way or if it goes that way? So in the case of the brahmanas' wives, Krishna, he perceives there'll be more prem resulting if they go home. Their love for me will simply increase. The brahmanas' wives, they put forth some counter proposals when Krishna told them to go home. The Acharyas give us the detail that the Brahmana's wife said, look, are you thinking that we're caste Brahmanas, we're wives of Brahmanas, and therefore we can't associate with you because you're a cowherd boy, a Vaishya? Why would you think that? Look, we've already demonstrated we have thrown away all material designations, all external designations by our racing out to feed you with food. We've already left our families. We've already left our husbands. So why then would you think that we have to take into account that we're a different caste? It doesn't make any difference. We're showing you. We're transcendental. Then Krishna, he would say to them, look, actually, I'm the property of the gopis. I'm the property of the cowherd girls in Vrindavan. Even that didn't finish it. It didn't finish the proposal. The wise of the Brahmana said, that's all right. You keep the gopis. We won't have to go back to the village with you where the gopis are. We'll stay in the forest. And we will be content to take upon our heads whatever tulsi leaves fall on the ground while you're embracing the gopis. In other words, they presented themselves as just being the servant of the servant. We don't want to be the topmost lovers. We'll be the servants of your cowherd girl lovers. Just see the humility. This is the kind of humility that purchases Krishna. We'll just live in the forest and wait for you to come to the forest, and while you're embracing your topmost lovers, if some tulsi leaf falls on the ground, we'll take it and put it on our heads. This is humility. We can learn so much from this. We don't want to be topmost in the material sense, even in devotional service. We want to be the humble servant of the devotees. So there's so much we can learn from this Leela. And I hope that when you read Krishna book, you'll relish it more and more.